This is Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen. And it's time for another visit to Apna Street with Julian Crandall Hollick. In all the years, Julian has been chronicling the lives of Bombay's homeless, the pavement dwellers of Apna Street. There has never been a year that began quite like 1993. Myla Malun, the group the pavement dwellers formed to give them some political power and a better chance of owning a home of their own, was already well established by 1993. In December 1992, a mosque was destroyed in the north of India, unleashing the demons of hatred in the name of God across much of the country. Bombay assumed it would escape the violence between Hindus and Muslims. It did not. In January 1993, the city literally was engulfed in flames. Hundreds died, often burnt alive. Julian and his family lived through those days. Thanks to his curfew pass as a journalist, he was able to visit the pavement dwellers in Baikala and record Living Through the Riots.
Friday morning, January the 8th. Sagira came to the office in Baikala to cancel a trip she and I had planned for Crawford Market. Somebody's been killed in the docks. It's tense right now. It's better you don't come. And things also turn ugly that very same evening here on Jula Maidan.
So I went to number 12 Chawl. I had 10 kilos of rice which I wanted to take across. But these boys in number 12 who I've known since I was since they were small, of course now they're all grown up. And earlier they used to always call me Amma.
But Samana's boys have grown into gundas or hard thugs, employed by political parties who want to use the riots to settle scores and spread their influence. And Samana's frankly lucky they didn't beat her up.
And now they were talking to me in a very rude kind of tone of voice and saying, don't go there, don't go there. I said, why shouldn't I go there? And they said, there's curfew. So I said to them, how is it all these years you've always called me Amma? And now suddenly you're addressing me in this fashion. My daughter also got very angry with me and told me don't pick up a fight with them. But I still told these boys that you have no business to talk to me like this. If there's curfew, I'll find out for myself, but you can't address me in this way.
It's pointless asking who started it. It could be accidental, it could be deliberate. All it needs is one little something to get the rumor mill going. God's got precious little to do with it. This is hooliganism, Bombay style, the darker side of human nature. Friday morning, Hindus, Muslims and Christians are neighbors. Saturday morning, they're eyeing each other with suspicion and fear.
Earlier, they used to give us water and, you know, we had a good relationship with them, but now they're not even prepared to give us water. I can understand that, but at least they should let us pass.
Samana's forced to take shelter in the Myla Milan compound, along with 300 other men, women and children. The street kids defend them, and bottles, cans and metal collected for recycling serve as their ammunition. Anarkali, the tailor, who lives a few huts away from Samina, is shot, but he'll survive. Another neighbour has his arm hacked off with a sword. And one boy, due to be married next week, sees his little sister stranded outside the office compound.
The child was on the other side, and the firing started, so he decided to run across to try and save the child, and in the process he got shot.
The pavement dwellers on Jula Maidan are too frightened, they're too vulnerable to start fighting anyone.
We don't want to fight with anybody, we do want to live together because basically we are poor and we can't afford to go on fighting. We have stuck together, we've even protected Hindu children.
For a week, the city burns. The violence invades even our street. A furniture store is gutted by fire just because it's owned by a Muslim. A man in the apartments opposite, driving home from the airport, is stopped, pulled out of his car, beaten up because his name is Muslim. Gangs of thugs roam the streets on motorbikes. The entire city goes into what seems like cardiac arrest. And Baikala is under total military curfew. On the seventh day, the curfew is lifted for a few daylight hours. I hitch a lift with Kalpana. Sona has walked a mile from 14th Gully in Kamatipura through the Muslim neighbourhood on Malan Azad Road, which is a pretty brave thing for a Hindu to do.
People in my lane, we don't believe, we don't call ourselves Muslims or Hindus. We've always lived together, and even now we still work together like that.
Facing her tiny hut on 14th Gully are the brothels, and behind her, the rear wall of St. Mary's Catholic Church.
Our huts are against a wall, a church wall. So Mother Mary is on the other side. So we say to her that you may be facing the other way, but we are behind you on the other side. So you should look after us as well. So we believe in every God.
What's the immediate need now to get everybody back on their feet? Is it food? Is it money? Is it shelter? What?
We need everything. We need all these things. But somehow at least we are managing over there in 14th Gully. But now when I see what Samina is going through, I realize her situation is so much worse. And God is looking after all of us. After all, it's we who are creating the problem, and it's not a Hindu God or a Muslim God that is creating it.
In their cramped downtown office, Jockin Selene and Sheila Patel are trying to figure out how much food relief is needed and where. Sheikh has just arrived. He reports in about a local thug called Mushtaq, who's stolen three sacks of rice from the pavement dwellers in Baikala.
Okay, go and come fast.
Parking and also
okay. Okay. For them, you need 600 kilos of rice.
And 100 kilos dal.
Nothing has come into the city for 10 days. There's no flour, no rice, none of the basics.
They need four bags of rice.
Sheila says she'll find the food. Shaker can deliver it, and the women of Maila Milan and the street kids can distribute it.
That's not going to work.
We're 3 days later in the Maila Milan compound in Baikala. And two beat-up handcarts are being trundled into the compound.
You gotta repair this.
What? Not do, not.
One of the handcarts has a bent axle. It cannot possibly support 150 kilos of rice and dal. Samina bellows at a street kid to straighten it.
Take these off and straighten that wheel first. It'll just collapse. You've got to do this wheel first. Or get another one. Yeah. It's hopeless, this one. It'll break.
He bangs at the wheel half-heartedly. Two large sacks of rice and dal are removed. And the handcart breathes a sigh of relief and straightens itself up.
One.
Inside the office, Belly and Selvan Raju are scooping rice and dal from huge 300-pound jute sacks into smaller sacks that the handcarts can actually support.
Three.
Samina tries to teach the boys some basic maths. Now, fill your scoop up to the brim. Pour seven scoops into each sack. Make an effort, Dunderhead. Do it right. Oh, hasn't anyone got a 1 kilo tin? Then we know exactly how much to give everyone.
Father,
The smaller sacks are loaded onto the two carts, and Raju and Benny push them out into the street. Men, women and children are flocking out of their huts. Some have tin bowls, others only a plastic cup. And many are using their saris to welcome in the rice and the dal. And Samina is basically having a very hard day at the office.
2 scoops chawal, 1 scoop dal. Now scoop more. Everyone will get their fair share. 2 kg of rice, 1 kg of dal. Stop crowding around. Everyone will get some. Please stand back, or I'll bonk you one. Here, take Kasim Bhai. Take 2 scoops of rice and 1 of dal. Take mother.
Hey! You don't come from Jula Maidan. You have to be a member of Maila Milan from this street. A woman pushes her way to the cart, says, I've just become a member, so I qualify, right? Samina warns anyone listening that she's got 360-degree vision. Nobody better try to steal so much as 1 grain behind her back. And how many people are you claiming, huh? I know there's 8 in your house, not 12. Look, I don't care if your brother's family's just come. Be thankful for what you got this time. It's now over a week since the riots died down, but the city is still tense, and Baikala is still under curfew at night. But people are trying to pretend life is back to normal. Outside the office, Irfan the carpenter is making a bookcase out of odd bits of wood, yanking out old nails and planing down the rough surface and cutting and assembling. Inside the office, refugee families are watching a movie on Raymat's TV, specially loaned for the occasion. And at the back, Raju and Vijay Kumar, two of the street kids, are shoveling out rice to the Maila Milan members who live on Dimdimka Road. Now, this is the street where local thug Mushtaq stole 3 sacks of rice and dal a few days ago. So each household has been given coloured coupons which they can exchange for their ration here at the office. Now, many of the families have sent their kids to collect the rice and dal. And Raju, the street kid, says, parents should not let their kids roam any old where. They should be more responsible. Jackie and I know thinks food aid at best should be a one-shot deal, and Celine possibly hates it. She says it breeds dependency and apathy, and it saps individual responsibility. So Jackie and Celine and Sheila Patel have figured out a way to turn relief into something lasting and positive, something they hope will permanently alter the lives of poor people. The scene is Baikala. The time, 4 days later. Raymat's brought some people from her street to see Shekhar, who's busy filling out forms. Now, nobody in Zebanisa's family on Apnajopapati has lost his or her life. What they have lost is their livelihood. So instead of giving them compensation, Maila Milan is giving them a business loan to start afresh so they can move themselves out of dependency and poverty.
Loan information, purpose of loan. She wants to do a small kind of business. अमाउंट रिक्वायर्ड इज 500 rupees. अच्छा अगर लोन कैसा वापस करेंगे कैसा रिपेमेंट.
Now, Zebanisa plans to start preparing fast foods for the local mill workers. Shekhar wants to know if she'll be repaying weekly or monthly, and Raymat acts as the go-between. She'll give weekly. How much can you repay each week? How about 10 a week? If it goes well, I can raise it to 25.
Here will come my signature. Check. I'll take Ramat's signature also. You sign karo.
Raymat tells Zebanisa to place her thumb on the ink pad and then on the loan form. She also wants the grandmother to countersign, but grandmother isn't here. She can't come until lunchtime. Shekhar opens his desk and hands Raymat the ink pad and starts counting out crisp new rupee notes.
500 rupees.
Next up is Segira Khatun from Apna Jopadpati.
Loan application number 2. Jopada number?
8.
At number 8.
Her husband, Apna Mohammed Jopadpati. Ilyas, ran a pan shop. Brought home 50 rupees a day. Now he's lost all his stock. So he wants a loan to start again and to expand. For 2 weeks and more, people will keep on coming in for loans, hoping to rebuild their shattered lives and to turn a nightmare into the dream of something better. But whether they make it or not is a very different matter.
Jopada number?
This is Julian Crandall Hullock in Bombay.
Apna Jopadpati.
Next time on Apna Street, Sakina's husband leaves her, and Julian learns what Muslim women really think of men and mullahs. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, produced by Robert Molesky, edited this week by Margaret West, and directed by Ned Wharton, with production help from Walter Ray Watson, Carlene Windahl, Catherine Maddox, and Jim Lesher. Thanks also to member station WHYY in Philadelphia. Our technical director is Andrea Jackson-Gewertz, with audio technicians Gary Henderson, Paula Hickey, Renee Pringle, Drew Reynolds, and Andy Rosenberg. Barbara Rehm is the assistant managing editor. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman, with additional music from Steph Scajari. I'm Leanne Hansen.